Werner. Today we meet someone that you especially appreciate, right?
Hey, Jono, yeah, I can't believe we're back already. It's been 2 weeks. Time's really flying, and I think it's partly because we're getting some really good feedback from people, constructive criticism. Keep it coming. We really want to shape the show into something that people want to listen to each week and look forward to. Well, for one thing, Jono, like you mentioned, I've been really looking forward to doing this interview. This week you speak to Aga Shostek. I mean, I don't know if she really needs introduction to your listeners. She is one of the best designers and one of the most well-known and most humble personalities that I know in Poland. She's got a track record of note, and we go into detail about that. We also speak about design within Central Europe, within Poland specifically, which I think gives us a bit of a nice insight. And then we speak about the Seed Cards project that she's busy with and that is gaining her a lot of traction in the market in the moment, a brilliant tool.
Yeah, I guess she had a ton with us. From her experience as a student of design in the Netherlands to the incredible projects she has been part of. An amazing journey indeed.
And then there's a lot of storytelling, a lot of personal notes, a lot of insights. I think this is really a show of value. And in fact, we will have to bring Aga back for another conversation because we couldn't even get to all the topics we wanted to cover. So I really hope people are going to enjoy the show. Then looking forward to hosting here in Warsaw. Looking forward to get to Element Store.
Yeah, he can wait to be part of this event.
I'm actually going out on business to Greece and I'm specifically cutting the trip short to get back to be at Element Talk. So please, people, if you see us there, like a tall guy and a short South African guy hanging out, we would love to hear from you. We're really looking forward to the speakers at the event. And yeah, connect with us. Let us know what you think of the show. And yeah, have some fun. Okay, and then without further ado, here is Aga.
Hi, I'm Aga Shostek, and I think I should call myself experienced designer. I have a quite extensive experience in interaction design. I started with interaction design back in 2000. I started with the, at the time, experimental program in the Netherlands in Eindhoven, which was called User System Interaction. That was a two-year master program. And my dream was always to work on stuff which is like really futuristic. So I did first my internship at Philips Research, and I have this terrible tendency of graduating when the economic crisis comes. The problem was that when you were a designer, you were the last to hire and the first to fire. So there was a vacancy freeze at Philips Research, and they said, like, we don't need designers. So I didn't have much choice. I had to go somewhere else. And I ended up, after a few turns at Osei Technologies Research, where for 2 years I was in a software research team. We were working on offices of the future. That was something that I've been working on for some time, envisioning how it is gonna be when there are like sensors all over the place, robots walking and bringing you coffee and stuff like that. And 2 years after that, after I joined, the management of Osei Technologies decided, and you know, take it as you will, that software was not the future. So they closed our department, saying, okay, like, you know, like, if we are wrong, we have enough time to go back. And of course, they didn't have time to go back. So like, to fast forward to the future, 5 years later, they were bought by Canon because they were not sufficiently developed in software. For me, it was actually a really lucky turn. I ended up back at the University of Technology in Eindhoven at the Industrial Design Department doing my PhD. I was working on kind of communicating social signals through media, and that brought me to Google. I was at Google in Zurich. I was working there for Gmail for some time. And then after this, you might call me crazy, but I sort of said that I'd rather go back to the university and do my research again. So I went back to the university after this adventure and ended up at something which is called Intelligent Lighting Institute, which was a collaborative institute between the university and industry. We were working with Philips Lighting, and there I spent a year designing some stuff for hospitals, like how can you help people get healed using light. Then there was a very interesting moment because I was offered a position in Delft. So we started thinking about moving, and somehow when we started talking about moving, you know, to after thinking, oh, hey, how about we move in the Netherlands? Maybe we move to the US, or maybe we move in Europe. We somehow ended up in Poland.
As things do, you know.
Yeah, right. So basically, the one thing that we told ourselves, we spent 12 years living abroad. So we told ourselves, we are not coming back to Poland. We are moving to Poland. And this is a very different country from the country we left. all those 12 years earlier. So we came to Poland, and it was a very interesting thing because, you know, Netherlands is quite developed design-wise. They are quite advanced. They are quite also quite adventurous in the way of thinking and using design to create new stuff. I came to Poland, and I realized that suddenly I'm sort of moved back in time with respect to understanding the value of design, which was good and bad. Bad was like, you know, I was talking about stuff and people were looking at me saying like, what are you talking about? But the good thing was that like, as much as I unconsciously went through the process of kind of design gaining position in business in the Netherlands, I had another chance to see and hopefully have a little bit of an influence over it in Poland by bringing my expertise, but also understanding how this process happens, which was really amazing. Of course, like one thing that I couldn't do my research anymore. So I had to say goodbye to this activity, which was sad, but I think that was also really good. But I got this amazing chance to move on the business side and really try to understand what sort of value design brings to business and how business understands or misunderstands what is the role of design. So I spent, and I'm still spending, the last 8 years working with different businesses in Poland as in a capacity of an external help. I wouldn't call myself a consultant because sometimes I'm a consultant, sometimes I'm a mentor, sometimes I'm a designer, sometimes I'm a researcher. So, you know, different roles. Yeah. I'm really trying to bring to their attention the value of design as a business tool and the value of design as a thought process that makes people be inspired and be more courageous to do new stuff.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Okay, I'm so stoked to have you in the show with us today.
Oh, thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
Yeah, I mean, to be clear, people need to understand that we actually know each other from before the podcast. And myself and Jonathan, we foaming the mouth to get you on here to have a little bit of conversation.
Oh.
You're like the queen of design in Poland, right?
Mm.
Like wherever I go, I go touch something. So it's really great to have you on here.
Really, I'm really happy to be here with you guys.
That's great. Now, Aga, right? So now I can ask you all kinds of difficult questions because I'm in control. So what is your value proposition? Why should people work with Aga Szostek?
Szostek, yes. Szostek. My value proposition is that I want to help them be braver in what they do through bringing value to their customers. And also, this is the design part. Another thing is that my goal is to help them to understand that there is a different way to do things from how they traditionally conduct their business. It really changes the way they approach their daily business and their daily way of doing things.
Makes sense. I like that. The question was originally design, right? Like, why design? Why Aga and design?
Huh.
But also the thing is, you're casting the net of design very wide. You're not mm-hmm. niching yourself.
No.
Why design? Why?
This is a funny story that goes back to me being a teenager. My parents, they both were engineers, and I went like very heavily on a teenage rebellion. So I said, I want to be nothing like them. Against their wishes, I sneak my application for high school to humanistic profile, which I told them after it was absolutely no way to withdraw it anymore and put it back to the, you know, the kind of more scientific class. So basically, I ended up with this humanistic education throughout my high school and then studies here in Poland. But very, very quickly when I started studying, I realized that this is not enough challenge for me, that I don't want to just understand things, but I want to create things. And then, you know, this kind of logical, technical background of trying to kind of make an algorithm out of everything kicked in. And suddenly I realized that I just don't fit into this crowd. Like, I'm verbose, but I'm not this kind of eloquent person who would go and, you know, kind of use a lot of words to say very little. Sorry, like I hope that I'm not offending humanists.
I don't feel offended.
All right. No, but also, like, you know, like I studied linguistics, which is the discipline where you really kind of play with the language. Probably if I ended up with sociology or psychology, maybe my path would have been different. I'm not regretting this at all, by the way. And it was an amazing experience and education because it broadened my horizons into things like philosophy that, you know, like now I'm sort of rediscovering these days and then trying to see, okay, there's actually a lot of things that I've learned back then that I can use today. So amazing education. However, like I couldn't see myself working in it. And the problem is that back at the time in Poland, like there was no chance that you could go from university to the University of Technology.
Yeah.
Like no way. So my then boyfriend, today husband, got an offer to do another master program in the Netherlands. I was in Copenhagen at the time. I was writing my master thesis there. there. And I went to visit him and I heard about this program, what they were like kind of bringing together people from humanities and people from technology, and they were teaching them design. And I started looking into this and I was thinking like, oh my gosh, this is the combination that I want. Like, you know, I never wanted to be a programmer. And mm-hmm. I never wanted to be a psychologist or a sociologist, but I wanted to have these tools and these skills to build something. So I applied for the program and they laughed at me. And they said like, okay, like, hello, girl, like, what do you want here? Like, you know, your education doesn't fit what we want. So I went to the director of the program, Maddie Janssen. She unfortunately passed away last year. Amazing person. And I told her, like, I asked her, like, okay, what do you want me to do so I can get here the next year? And she told me, like, okay, if you study cognitive psychology and you study basics of programming, we will get you in. Okay. So I studied for a year on my own. You know, it was before the European Union, so I couldn't work in the Netherlands. Okay. Actually, I was cleaning houses for a moment because I wanted to have some money, and that was the only thing that I could do.
Right.
And I was studying. I was learning all this stuff. So the next year, my application got at least accepted for an interview. I went to an interview and I ended up not being accepted. I blew the interview like big time. I was having this professor sitting opposite to me, like extremely intelligent and very intimidating. I was scared. I was scared of him. I was scared like hell. So I blew it. So I left and I was like saying like, oh my God, like, you know, it's so terrible. I really want to be there. And I bumped into Maddie and she saw me and she recognized me and she said like, hey, come with me. And I told her, okay, I blew it completely. I was like, yeah, I was a mess. And she told me like, okay, I gave you this chance and I'm not going to go back on this. So I'm giving you a wild card, but I'm not giving you a wild card to join the program. I'm giving you a wild card to join the first month of the program.
Oh.
And then you have to prove to us that you are a worthy person to be in the program. So the first month, it was called the homologation phase. So basically it was for software engineers to learn some of psychology and sociology and for the humanists to learn more of the programming. I had to do both. And after a month, they told me, oh, okay, like, you're worth it.
We'll keep you.
We will keep you. And for me, like, you know, I still remember this feeling. I came to the first week, to the first class, and I sat with these people. And suddenly mm-hmm. I was sitting there and I was like, oh my God, among people who think like me. And it was like the most amazing feeling of my life professionally.
So you felt at
home. Yes.
That's excellent. Great. So, Aga, can you tell us which kind of work do you focus on those days?
So, basically, these days I'm mostly asked to come and help on a strategic level. I'm actually asked to help people to understand how they can become more customer-centric. I'm helping to build customer experience strategies. I'm helping to figure out how the value of customer experience should be measured. I'm helping to educate people on a sort of higher management level about the value of design. But I also do some projects looking after these kind of projects every now and then where I design something.
Okay. So you're still hands-on, right?
Yeah. You have to get your hands dirty to still remember what it is all about, right? So this is my consulting side, but I'm also doing more and more of my own projects. Somehow I figured that I believe that there is need for tools and things that help people think about design in different ways, like helping them to be, like I said, like more courageous, to stretch their imagination. And this is something that I'm focusing on more and more these days.
Aga, what I find really interesting when I talk to you, right? So when I mean, on either side of things, I'm not saying anybody's wrong here, please, even the people listening, I'm not saying anybody's wrong. But when we speak to a developer, the developer sounds like a developer who does development things.
Mm-hmm.
When I speak to my family, who's UX designers, they speak my language like a UX guy. You know, we talk about wireframes and all these kind of things. Mm-hmm. And Jonathan with his front end and design side, they're like family. But when I speak to you, right, you got, like I said before, you throw the net so wide. You talk about design. I find it quite hard to attach you to a discipline. And I think that's probably your intention. But at the core, at the heart of Aga, what is it that you cling to as your design truth? Is there something like that, or are you very flexible around how you do your stuff?
So actually, my deepest motivation is to look into experiences and creating things that make people remember the things that they encounter.
And so it's on the human level, right? You're not creating something and then go, hey, human, look at this beautiful thing I've created and then see the reaction. You're looking at the human first, right?
Yes.
Is that That's what I'm hearing.
Yeah, and I'm also trying to look into not really what they say they want, but what motivates them, what they are dreaming about, what makes them like themselves more, be better people and things like that. And I'm trying to take this and bring it into design, or actually bring it into a solution through the design process.
And that solution could be anything, right?
This solution can be anything. So like, it can be an application, or it can be like, you know, a website or whatever.
Or lights.
Or a light. It can be a service. It can be space. Actually, I was doing, like, in the last 2 years, two projects with architects on how you design space to bring inspiration and creativity into people.
Yeah.
And bring them together to support collaborative spirit rather than competitive spirit. So for me, the matter that the fabric that I'm dealing with doesn't really matter as long as it has a goal of making the best out of people.
So let's say you're going to go and design a space, mm-hmm. a learning or design space. Mm-hmm. Of course, I mean, I know you. You know how to unlock the potential.
Mm-hmm.
But let's say you don't necessarily understand, because I would
I'm not an architect. That's not all this.
Okay, great. Thanks for taking the words right out of my mouth, because I'm trying to not offend you. But you're not an architect.
You're not going to offend me.
So
I'm also not anymore a UI designer.
Okay. There we share a common challenge, right? So do you then collaborate with architects to help you in?
Of course. For me, what I bring is a way of thinking, a way of approaching different subjects, and also a way of looking at solutions. I think that I'm able to bring something from a very different perspective than you typically bring.
Yeah.
Because of this, like, really broad experience and, you know, working on different subjects and different challenges. And of course, I can do my drawings and I can, you know, like, do all this stuff that the creative person does. But I need people who are experts in a particular domain to work with me. So first of all, to keep me from making stupid mistakes, because of course, like, you can easily get drawn into, like, you know, a corner you don't even see it.
Yeah.
This is one thing. And another thing is that also my expertise is in seeing these things and conceptualizing them. Mm-hmm. But I need people who are able to bring it into a detail.
You're the conductor in front of the orchestra.
Yeah, I think that this is maybe a good comparison. I hope that this doesn't sound like I'm kind of a stuck up.
No. I think, I mean, what is the book, The Art of Possibility?
Yeah.
You read that book,
yeah,
and you understand the role of a conductor, mm-hmm. in an orchestra. It comes to life there, where it's like really unlocking the potential of other people.
Yeah,
right?
Totally.
It's not about you standing in front there being famous.
Exactly.
Then I'm going off script, and Jonathan's going to hate me, right? But I have to ask one question now, because I like the idea of you being so broad, and I think, mm-hmm. that is what we should try and be, is like, mm-hmm. open your eyes for multiple things. But I find that sometimes that clients are only able to articulate themselves in a certain field. It's like, mm-hmm. hey, Vanner, we've got this problem, right? And we are going to fix it with this app,
mm-hmm.
right? Are you able to have the conversations where you get the client to understand, like, hey, it might not be an app. It might be something completely different. Are you having that conversation with clients, or is it still a challenge for you?
No, it's very often happening, and I love those conversations. So first of all, what happens with clients, and this is based on our nature, that we are not really good as humans to think in terms of problems. We are excellent in thinking in terms of solutions.
Oh, yeah.
So basically what typically happens is that, like, a client or any of us, I think that all of us do it in our daily life every time. We didn't really figure out what the problem is, but we already have an idea and we want to do stuff. So basically what we do, we come with this snippet of a problem, which may not even be the problem. And then we come with an idea which feels good to us, but it might be like a half-baked potato that will give you basically a stomachache after you eat it.
Amen, yeah.
So basically what I do, I'm trying to divide these things. When I go to a client and say, okay, like your idea can be excellent. You are an expert in your field. You know what is needed. Let's focus on the problem. So, like, let's put this idea on the side, because I like to work in terms of multiple ideas and alternative ideas. So I say, okay, it's not going to be thrown away. Absolutely. But it's going to be one of the ideas that we are going to try out. But let's try to understand the problem better. And suddenly when you start talking about the problem and you investigate the problem, not that rarely it happens that the client says like, okay, so like this idea is really good, but I have to do so many things before I can actually implement this and it makes sense.
Yeah.
So clients often they like, you know, after they see the perspective of their clients, they say, huh, now I see where the problem is and therefore we should maybe do something else.
And that's also how you gain trust of customers, right, of clients.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
I have two questions, so two linked questions. With your background, what are the main challenges that you encounter mm-hmm. in your practice in Central Europe in terms of work? And then what are the learnings that you learned from academia and corporations that you're able to apply being independent?
Okay, so let's start with the first one. Yeah. I think that my biggest challenge when it comes from working in these different domains doesn't necessarily come from the fact that I work in academia, business, and as an independent person. I think that it more comes that I lived in different countries with different cultures. And the challenge there is that there is a huge gap between how the Dutch culture operates and how the Polish culture operates, because these were my two main countries.
Okay.
So basically in the Netherlands, the culture, the corporate culture is very flat. You can go to your manager and then say, okay, like I disagree with you. It's more like a servicing role. So the role of the manager is to help you bring about the best potential from you. And I was really lucky with my managers. I had amazing managers throughout, you know, my professional career, corporate career in the Netherlands. So my managers were just coming saying, okay, like what else can we do so you can, you know, go forward. And then when you come to Poland and start working in a corporate world, the culture is much more hierarchical. So basically you've got bosses and the bosses are telling you what you are supposed to do and you are a cog in a machine and then you are supposed to sort of, you know, like a hamster running your little wheel and, you know, deliver.
Yeah.
And of course, like, you know, like if you spend like all your professional life living in one culture, when you come to this culture, you are like a frog thrown on a hot water. Like you just cannot do this. So the challenge there was that I really had to relearn how to deal with Polish managers in order to bring my point through without really offending them and annoying them to their core. And at the same time, to understand how I should act and when I should kind of, you know, withdraw and sort of let them, you know, take the light and sort of have their moment of fame in order to get things done. So it was more on a behavioral perspective, like professional behavior perspective challenge. There wasn't a challenge from my, you know, sort of expertise level.
Okay.
The unexpected advantage of this was that I've never had a problem talking to people who are in really high positions in companies. For me, like coming and talking to a CEO was like talking to yet another person, you know, like just, you know, they're also humans. And often when you are in a culture which is like very hierarchical, these people on the top are very lonely and they don't really have many people who want to talk to them without having a hidden agenda.
Oh, yeah.
So basically the advantage of talking to me was that, you know, they knew that I didn't have any hidden agenda. You know, like I was not part of the corporation. I was not part of the game. I was just this, you know, woman coming with this crazy idea about customer experience. And I was trying to kind of, you know, convince them that it was a worthy subject to approach. So therefore, they were quite keen to talk to me. And that was like something that I discovered after I learned that I shouldn't be like as straightforward as I was at the beginning. Then I learned that that was a huge advantage, like a hidden weapon that I could use and really get myself in a position of having something to say and being listened to.
Excellent.
So there's one thing that sort of differentiates academia, corporate world, and being independent. And again, this is a slight difference because being in academia and being in research, industrial research, this is not very different. So you are like, especially in the time when I was in research, industrial research in the Netherlands, we were still very free to do what we wanted to do. The world was much slower, you know, like also the innovation was not coming, you know, like every 2 months, something new was not popping up. So like we were working on stuff and we had enough space and time to explore things and to really, you know, think outside the box and be imaginative about like different things that we envisioned for the world. So it was really quite amazing time. So for me, this freedom that you have in academia and you have in the industrial research was something that I loved. You know, it gave you the space to think independently, to develop ideas and to test them.
Yeah.
When you come to the corporate world, like more business world, there is no space for this. And I think that this doesn't matter whether this is Netherlands or Poland or France or the US or any other country. Like, typically, the pace is much faster. So, you know, you sort of lose this space that you have for thinking.
For reflection.
So that was something that really changed. And there was another thing that changed after leaving academia, corporate world, and going independent. And was something that a friend of mine warned me when I said, like, okay, I'm not going to work for business. I'm going to work with business, but not for business anymore. And he told me, you know, like, once you feel the freedom of being your own boss, it's really hard to go back. And I sign with everything I have under this statement. I tried, like, I was for a moment working for someone. So, like, it was a position, temporary position, but it was a position. And I was a terrible employee.
are you listening, Jonathan?
I can only agree with you on that point.
Yeah.
There is no going back.
Yeah, totally right. Yeah.
When you are working in academia and corporation, one of the advantages is that you have people around you who keep you updated about mm-hmm. the news, the technologies, mm-hmm. etc. What do you do right now? Now that you have your own thing, to still keep up to date with all trends and technologies that you will have to potentially work on. Mm-hmm.
So actually, you know, like, when you are in academia, you get this terrible habit of reading papers. So this is something that stayed with me. I love reading scientific papers. And, you know, for me, staying in touch with what's going on in my professional domain in human-computer interaction, it gives me, first of all, the understanding of, like, what are the next things? Because academia is always a little bit ahead of what's going on in business, yeah. Definitely. So, like, you know, the things that were, like, really hot in academia some years back, they are coming and becoming hot in business. So this is, like, sometimes you don't even have to read papers, but you just, like, when you observe the titles, yeah. What are the tracks at conferences, you really know what's going on. Another thing is that basically there is this sort of para-academic paper, which is called Interactions, a magazine, and I'm subscribed to it. So I go through this. Sometimes I read it, sometimes I scan it because I may not have time.
Great, I've got Aga's secret. I'm writing it.
So I have actually a collection I was, like, looking recently from, like, 2011, I think.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, you've got methodologies there. You've got what's going on, like, how people approach things, like, artistic installations. This is very much technology oriented, but this is where I'm kind of finding my inspiration, or, like, seeking for inspiration. I go and meet different people and talk to them, and they sort of tell you about trends. Like, I think that actually, if we listen more, we would learn a lot from other people today, especially because, like, you know, like, people love to talk about what they are doing, and then therefore you learn. Like, you guys are doing this podcast, right? This is, like, probably if people bring some new stuff, you know it.
Yeah.
And I think that these are the two things that really kind of keep me on my toes. Of course, I read a lot of books, but these days I'm not reading books about design. I'm reading the books around design.
Yeah. I think it becomes very important. I see that a lot, where you can only read so many, this is how you do UX books. You need to look beyond that, right? You need to look at the fringe. You need to look at psychology. You need to look at all kinds of other things that kind of plays into it.
Exactly. And this kind of brings ideas to your head. And also, especially tool-wise, it gives you ideas for, like, what sort of tools you could use to get more information or different information or deeper information.
So, a bit of a different perspective on things, right?
Yeah. And of course, like, you know, like, I'm still having quite some friends in academia. So, like, they tell me about the research.
You've got some insiders.
Yes. And by the way, I used to work a lot on technologies. These days, I'm probably less savvy on that one. Mm-hmm. Fortunately, I have a savvy husband.
Yeah, so, like, he's, you know, quite savvy.
Yeah. So he's like, you know, like, if I don't know something, he says, like, you don't know about it? And then he tells me all about it. So, you know, then I know. So, like, you know, I have my walking Wikipedia on technologies at home, which definitely helps. But, you know, like, in so many ways, I see technology and all the new stuff that's happening as means to an end, and being designing stuff that makes people happy.
Yeah.
And this happiness aspect, this well-being, that these things, this is something that excites me and keeps me always interested.
Like, energized. Mm-hmm. Talking about making people happy, we want to get to one of your key projects, is why we brought you in, because we're sneaky like that. Before we get there, is there maybe a project that sits somewhere in your portfolio that you're particularly proud of?
I've got a few projects that I'm really proud of. One being Priority Inbox for Gmail, which was an amazing adventure and, you know, probably the broadest used project of mine.
Oh, yes.
Which is really nice. I've got another one, which I was talking about. Like, it's a recent project from 2 years back. We were redesigning a university space, which was like 45,000 square meters building. And we did it in 3 weeks with, like, you know, creative workshops with 3 alternative prototypes and evaluation of them with the stakeholders. I still cannot believe that we managed to do it. And by the way, it was a team of 6 people. We worked from 9 to 6, and there was only one all-nighter for 2 people. And otherwise, we managed. Yeah. And, you know, and we were sane at the end of the project. But the project I really love is the project I've done in this Intelligent Lighting Institute. It was a project for a psychiatric crisis center for people who had a psychotic attack. So, like, either depressive or maniacal. And in the Netherlands, you are not being sent to the psychiatric hospital right away. You go into something which is called, like, a safe home, where you spend 3 months.
For observation.
It's not for observation. It's for treatment. But basically, they say, okay, perhaps it was just an incident.
Okay.
So let's not put people who just had an incident immediately into a psychiatric hospital. Let's see whether that was one off. And if it was one off, they should go back to their normal lives after certain treatment and with, you know, prescription and control. But if you are not well, then you will go to the psychiatric hospital. It's a really long story, and I don't want to go, like, I think I would probably spend another, like, half an hour.
We're going to have to get you in for episode 2.
I will be happy to come. But basically what we did, we designed a lamp that was helping them to relax through breathing.
Yeah.
Yes.
I don't know if I'm allowed to do this, right? Because we do research on people before we do the show, right? Even our close friends, we snoop around. And I think your portfolio is actually on your LinkedIn profile.
It is.
Because apparently the light simulates breathing, right?
Yes.
That's awesome, man.
You might think that I'm crazy or something, but I do have this lamp at home.
I don't think you're crazy.
Maybe a little bit.
I've met you guys. Sometimes you just want to sit and breathe a little bit, right?
Yeah.
You get all the knowledge.
Yeah, so basically we designed this lamp, and it was supposed to help these people relax and kind of, you know, go into a good place.
That's awesome.
There is a question I can't wait to ask you. Based on all your experience, what makes a great designer?
Huh. I think the first thing that's necessary is sensitivity to other people. I've been teaching a lot. And when I look at my students and I see good designers and great designers, they are able to connect with people on a very deep level, but also they are able to abstract what they see and kind of detach it from what people say or how they act and kind of make it into a different level of understanding. And this is something that's an amazing skill that I think helps designers, or, like, you know, builds a designer which thinks independently and can bring new stuff and a new way of thinking. By the way, it comes at a cost, because typically this is connected or it kind of interlinked with a high level of sensitivity, like emotional approach, and, you know, just being a sensitive person. So there is a toll that you have to pay for this skill. So this is one thing. The other thing for me is independent thinking and being able to bring something that is in your head into a physical form, be it a drawing, be it a prototype, be it a kind of, you know, mock-up or something like this.
Yeah.
So, like, having this ability of taking what's going on in your head and make it into physical world. So this is the second thing that I think that makes people great designers. And the third one is to be able to listen to what people say about your design and stay open to what they are saying. And this comes with experience.
So yeah. Thanks for the feedback.
Yeah, definitely.
Right?
Yeah.
It's always sometimes a little bit painful.
Yeah.
Aga, so here is I think a rather good question, because I try to be a little bit clever now. Is
oh my gosh.
Even if I have to say it myself, right, Jonathan? No, I smiled when I wrote this one down, because I sometimes listen to you as you kind of explore your inner challenges, right?
Mm-hmm.
What advice would you give to your younger self if you had to go back a few years and meet yourself along the road of this discovery? What advice would you give yourself?
I think I would give myself 2 sorts of advice. One, and this is on a very personal level, like yourself and like who you are, because, you know, like, I am not a personality that you don't notice. And of course, you know, some people are not really happy with me having this. And sometimes it's really hard and, you know, I feel vulnerable on this and it can be really painful.
Yeah.
And I'm sort of getting to a point when I say, okay, like, it's not, you know, like, take me as I am, but it's more like saying, okay, like, I have those qualities and they have value. So, like, I should not beat myself up for them. So this is one thing. The second thing to tell to myself is be braver. Like, I know that, you know, you see me as a brave person, but I think that I'm still afraid of too many things. And I kind of have this resistance in me to go further and further and further. Oh, okay, I have two more.
You go.
Okay, so another one would be don't rush. Give yourself the time to know who you want to be and to think of how you want to get there. I have this tendency of really being always, you know, running forward. And probably the very last one would be to appreciate the people you have around you.
Thank you. That's really cool. And now the part for what Jonathan was eagerly waiting for is that you recently launched a awesome design tool,
mm-hmm.
right? It's called Seed Cards.
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about this project?
Yeah. So actually, this comes back from, it's 4 years ago, I think. I've been working with a Polish telecom at the time, Play. It's like a local telecom here in Poland. And after a number of years, we sort of got the understanding that customer experience and design are the things that should go on a strategic level. So I was offered by the CEO of the company, Jürgen Bang-Jensen, this amazing opportunity to do a strategic project on customer experience. I always try to work with people internally. I am not a big fan of like sort of a consultant coming and, you know, being a smart. I'm just not going to swear here and just coming and saying that, you know, like, yeah, I know better.
Yeah.
So basically what I did, I asked to find 50 people from the company who represent the values of the company, who are the walking spirit of the company. And I said, like, how about we design the strategy together? So I started working with them. And very quickly, I realized that we have a huge challenge, myself included, because I was at Play at the time for like 3 years. So we were all thinking in terms of telecoms, like, and telecom solutions. And I said, like, okay, like, if we are going to kind of keep on thinking in telecoms, we are not going to create a strategy that's going to be any different from any other telecom, basically, as simple as that.
Makes sense.
So basically what I did, I started doing research, finding stories of companies that are very customer-centric and looking for examples that they did, you know, sort of brought those examples as a way to inspire us to kind of think a little bit more outside the box. So I created the first set of seed cards. They weren't called seed cards at the time. They didn't have any name whatsoever. And there were like 250 and everybody hated me for 250 cards because they said like, there's no way we can go through them. They were designed in a really nice way because I was working with an amazing designer, graphical designer, but you know, the content was like so-so. But basically I created them. And we were working on the strategy and I saw how well it worked with people. So how inspired they were by the examples. Like sometimes there were simple examples that they knew, but they didn't recall at the time
of
the
workshop. Yeah, nothing to reference, yeah.
Exactly. So I got this and I said like, hey, this is a really nice idea. And as I'm lecturing I'm doing master classes on experience design. So I redesigned another set, smaller, for my master classes, for my students. So I created this prototype that you could print on a, you know, A4 sheet and you just cut the cards and you just put them together and then you have this set, just really simple. And I started bringing this to the classes and people loved it. And I could see how, you know, like their minds were going like, oh yeah, we could think about this and we could think about that and so on. So I was really happy with this. And the students kept on telling me, hey, make a product out of it. But, you know, I was really busy, you know, with projects and stuff. And at some point I had this project, which was an amazing project, but it almost, you know, made me not want to be a designer anymore.
Wow,
it was really tough on me. It was really challenging. I was really happy with the result, but I was exhausted. Seriously, when this project stopped, I said like, okay, I really need to think if I want to do a design job at all. You know, so if you're in this state, so like people were coming with next projects and I was saying like, no, I'm not doing any projects. And I said like, okay, how about I do this? How about I find a space now as I'm not taking any business to do this particular project? So I gathered my team three young designers, Marta, Radek, and Agata, my ex-students, all three. And I said, hey, let's do this. I have this idea. You've been working with these cards. How about we make a product out of it? They are amazing, you know, designers, visual designers and stuff like that. So we started working on this. And 3 months later, we had a prototype. We had the digital version of the cards. We never printed them before. And then I got a phone call from a big client and they said like, hey, we are organizing a customer experience conference and we would like to have you for a speaker. I said like, oh, really nice. Thank you. I'm really happy. And then I had this like stupid idea that, you know, like I'm quite impulsive every now and then. So I was thinking like, hey, I'll send them a sample of the cards. And I said like, hey, you know, I have this product. Maybe you might be interested in it. Thinking that, oh yeah, maybe they will buy one box.
Yeah.
And then I will have a deadline, so I will have to make it for this particular. Yeah, exactly. So basically, to cut a pretty long story short, I got a phone call from them a week later, and they said like, "Hey, really sorry, we have to pull on the offer on the speaker because there was some mix up with the program, and basically the slot that we had for you it's gone. You know, whatever. But we love the cards, and we would like to have 60 sets. And seriously, we had a printing house who was going to print everything, but we never did it. So she said, okay, like the conference happens then and then. Do you have enough time? So I called my team and I said, hey guys, like we have so much time. We have 2 weeks. Are we able to do it? And, you know, we checked everything and said, okay, we are able to produce everything. The problem was, though, that we forgot that it was February. And as you all are well aware of, February doesn't have 30 days. It has 28 days.
Yeah.
Yes. Yep. So we miscalculated the 2 weeks. We didn't have 2 weeks. We had 2 weeks minus 2 days. So we went like crazy. Like we said, okay, we cannot withdraw from this. Like we have to deliver. There was never a question that we would like sort of, you know, go back on the offer. We said, okay, we are going to make it happen. We started doing everything and like rushing with the design. So the design part was like, you know, the graphical design was ready, but we had to prepare the stuff for printing, you know, all the files and so on.
Yeah, format, colors, yeah.
Yeah. So basically, we brought it to the printing house with this amazing guy. Like this company is called Display. And if you're in Poland, like check them out and work with them. They are amazing. I love them. They are awesome. Anyway, so basically the guy who is running it said, okay, like I'm able to print everything. Think, but we are not able to make the boxes. We are not able, we just don't have time to glue the boxes together. So I said, okay, so how about you print the boxes and I just get a team and we will glue the boxes ourselves. So like, you know, you just show us how to do it and we will make it happen. Yeah. So basically, that was basically the night before the deadline and the deadline was already extended by a day. He brought the boxes, like the printed boxes to my place and it was the carnival night. Yeah. So I actually called my friends, designer friends. I said like, how about a carnival at my place, but like gluing the boxes together.
Oh, excellent.
Everybody was on board. Like, it was like, I said, okay, I'm bringing food, I'm bringing wine. you bring your hands, steady hands, and we will have a party. Yeah.
I love
it. That's brilliant.
Yeah. So actually, you know, we did it around my dining table. So not exactly the garage thing, but like very much startup thing. So we got the boxes ready and I promised that I would bring everything to the client around like 10 o'clock in the morning. We come to the printing house. And we see, so it's all being brought from the printer and we are seeing that the cards are not sorted. So basically that we have stacks of cards, but they are all of one kind. And it's been like 74 cards that you have to sort into 60 sets. So we went like, oh my gosh, like insane. So we started like, you know, shaky hands, like said, okay, we just can't do anything about it. So we started sorting the cards. I was looking at my phone and thinking, okay, probably if they, the conference was starting at 10 that day. So yeah. I said, like, probably they are not giving the cards on the first day, that they will be giving them on the second day. So perhaps I have a little bit more time. But I was like, you know, I was on my toes. And then we are like, we put the cards together and we are trying to put it into the first box and they don't fit.
Oh, no.
And you know, like we were like amateurs gluing the boxes. So it's like, of course, like, we must have done something wrong. And then the owner of the company, of this display company, he comes and he sees us like panicked, completely panicked. He pulled an all-nighter printing the cards for us. So like he was like on and drying them and, you know, like all this. He said he went to sleep for like 2 or 3 hours. He comes back and he sees us like panicking there. And he goes like, okay, like, don't worry. I'm just going to take each set and I'm going to cut all the cards by 1 millimeter. And that was it. That was the trick that made the boxes go like really smoothly in. Anyway, so like 3 hours later, we were ready. We had all the boxes packed. We packed them into a car. I packed an extra box for the lady who ordered everything, like with like big "I'm so sorry for being late" card. Brought it to the company, left it there, went home, went to sleep. Like, yep. You know, sleep through all this adventure. And then, you know, like a few days later, there is a complete silence. So the owner of the printing house, he calls me and says like, "Hi, did you ask them how it went?" Because he was like extremely curious himself too. And then I was like, "No, I didn't. I'm a little bit afraid. You know, like they probably hated it. That's why they are not writing to me." And said, "Like, come on, like if they hated you, they would have already written."
They would have
Yeah. In the worst case scenario, they are just completely neutral about it. So I, you know, I shaky hands, sat 8 o'clock in the evening, wrote my email, sent it over. By midnight, I have an answer. So I, like, you know, even more shaky hands, I open it. And then it says, "I'm so sorry for not replying earlier. We had a product launch, blah, blah, blah." You know, like all this stuff that kind of keeps people busy from answering mails, which are not, you know, crucial for the product launch. She says, like, "The cards made an amazing experience. Like when the hostesses brought the boxes, every single person opened the box and looked through the cards." And these were like top directors of the company.
Yeah.
And half of the top directors reported that they read all the stories on their way back from Poland to their home cities.
How great is that?
So it was like, oh yeah, amazing.
And that's how C-Cards were born.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So yeah, this is the story. And then, you know, like they are there and I'm talking to people who purchase them and use them and they seem to be quite happy about them. And I'm using them myself. Quite
excellent.
A lot.
And the thing is, where can you get a hold of them again? There's a website, right?
Yes. So actually, if you go to www.seed/cards.com for English version and .pl for Polish version,
yeah.
I'm not selling them myself. There is a link to two stores, Experience Corner and Polish version. For those who don't understand, I'm so sorry, but it's called Gadżety Trenera.
Yeah.
And basically, you can buy them there.
Great. And then also maybe a little bit just shortly around, how do they work? Is there a specific way that you're supposed to use them?
Mm-hmm. Like I mentioned, they were designed to inspire people during the ideation process. Typically what I do when people start coming up with ideas, brainstorming ideas, I just give them away and people can either look at the questions that are on one side or the stories that are on the other side.
We have to describe that. On one side, there is a question. Have you thought about...
How can you approach your clients where your competition is not available?
Yeah. And then you go like, what does that mean? And you flip the card over and there's actually a little story at the back that explains that.
Yeah. So basically the idea is that you have all those questions that are supposed to trigger you to think, is it possible?
Yeah.
But basically there is a company that did it. And then basically when you flip the card to the other side, you can hear a real story of an implemented solution of a company that's generally known that's in the world or was in the world, and then you can get inspired
by it. And then the other thing that I steal often, because you steal like an artist, right, is there's also tips about doing exercises in the box as well, like little tasks or that you can incorporate in your workshop process.
Yeah, so basically what all my students told me is like, don't just get the cards, like please give us instructions on how to use them.
Yeah.
So I created a set of 10 scenarios for workshops. They are broader, of course, than just ideation part. But basically, you get on one side the instruction how many people should be there, what sort of materials you should prepare, how much time more or less the workshop takes. And then on the other side, you have the descriptions of all the exercises that you do that kind of goes from having a concept to having something that you can kind of discuss in a business setting. Yeah. And of course, like these are just suggestions.
You can use them the way you want, right?
Absolutely.
Then the other thing, they are more aligned towards experience design or customer experience, right?
Mm-hmm.
You agree with that, right?
Definitely.
It's not necessarily like deep diving in design thinking or product design. It's
not
more around customer experience,
yes.
Right? Anyways, Jonathan.
Do you know a particular project your cards have been used on? That would be a cool story.
Okay, I don't know a particular project, but I do know that they've been used, for example, in UK by part of the British government that works on design. So this is a pretty cool...
Cool,
they are
right?
Designing...
Is it called MI5? MI6? What do they call them? I messed that joke up completely. Right? That would have been a good story to tell. Like,
The
Secret Service is in
Yeah,
cards.
Totally right.
Yeah.
I would love that too.
They might be listening right now.
Yeah. But actually, I also, which I'm really happy about, is Intuit. So like one of the biggest interactive agencies in the US, they bought 5 and then immediately bought another 5. Nice. So they have them in their deck and they were really happy with them.
Excellent. Because it brings me to the next question is that there was a note from someone that we both admire who also received the set.
Yeah.
They've crossed the world, right? They're around the planet.
They are. So actually what you're referring to is Seth Godin. Basically, I did the Yield MBA workshop 2 years ago. And, you know, like Seth and the workshop gave me the courage to go and actually make it happen and ship it. So I was thinking that like as a thank you thing, I was happy to, like, I sent one set to him, like with a big thank you note for organizing the workshop. Yeah. And like, you know, coming up with this idea of Alt MBA, and that in consequence gave me the power to actually make it happen. And I got a beautiful note from him saying that he loves the set and the design of it, and that he's really happy to have it, which is really amazing.
Man, I'm smart. Smiling so hard, it's my face.
yeah. Of course, I've never expected to hear back from him. So, like, when you get this note, I was like high for the whole day. Like, seriously,
that's
like
great.
my husband, we were driving a car. And he said, like, please don't fly it.
That's great.
Yeah, but they also got actually purchased in Australia.
Okay.
There are a few sets in Australia. There are sets in Mexico.
Yeah, I've got a little present from you because you went to Mexico, right?
Yeah, I did. They are in the all around US and they are all around Europe.
Excellent.
I wonder if there's a few of them in South Africa. They must be.
I don't know.
I need to look into this, Erica. We need to represent.
Yeah, it would be awesome.
What is next for the seed cards? Do you have plans? Do you have new cards, extensions?
So actually, this is like, I had this challenge because of one idea, which was probably the simplest one, was to kind of, you know, create another, you know, extension pack for seed cards and another one and another one and another one. And I think that I'm sure that at some point I will create an extension pack for seed cards. But my goal is bigger. Like my dream is to help people stretch their imagination in a creative process. And therefore, I think that, like, you know, like, again, having more of the same is like, you know, complete contradiction with this idea. So what I'm doing now, and I'm almost done with it, I'm creating a very, very different set of cards, which are adjectives. And you might say, like, okay, adjectives, what are you talking about? But basically, what I strongly believe in is that experience design is all about adjectives. When we think about designing stuff, and you guys both know it, we sort of say, like, something should happen. So, like, we use a noun and a verb. And experience is all in the adjectives. So basically, I created this set of cards, also inspired by Seth and Alt MBA. He talks about edges, right? So he talks about, like, you have to choose whether you are closed or open, you are small or big, you are adventurous or conservative, and so on. So, you know, I was thinking, like, oh my gosh, this is like such a smart idea. So I created a set of 99 antonyms, or like actually 198. Mm. So, like, you know, 99 pairs of antonyms.
Yeah.
Which provoke you to set, like, what sort of qualities do you want for your solution? Like, do you want to be modern or traditional? Do you want to be mature or young? Do you want to be big or small? Do you want to be social or maybe individualistic? And I was working with, this is called a Workshop of Simple Polish Language. This is a workshop connected with University of Wrocław and with linguists there. And we were creating really a set that really nicely represents the antonyms. And then I was working with Rob Tesh, our friend, who is in Edinburgh, and he was helping me to translate it into English. So we have a really good antonyms combination there. This is the ongoing project. We are finishing the design part. So the instructions are there. There will be 7 exercises, again, like to help people to use the cards. So there will be 7 instructions. There will be 99 pairs of adjectives, and this project should be done by the end of June. So this is one. And another one, I think this is a more personal project for me that comes from academia and from research. I have a list of deep needs that people have, that we as humans have. And I also got an amazing illustrator, Dorota Cichocka, who made illustration for those cards. Mm-hmm. And these should be ready also, you know, probably the end of holidays. So I already, the drawings, that the illustrations are ready. I just need to have time to bring it together into a form of cards.
This brings us to like one or two questions around this. The thing is, this actually needs to have another show. And I think we need to do this later, is around the skill sets of hosting and running workshops.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not going to deep dive it in this show. We need to invite you back.
I will be happy to come and talk
about
it.
Because I sometimes think workshop carries this bad name these days. When I started my career a billion years ago, people didn't do workshops, right? Mm-hmm. We went away, did our stuff, yeah. And then we started doing collaborative design, which was really great, and it really brought people in. And then I think at some stage, the wrong people started doing workshops, and I have found that some clients said to me, like, Vanner, if you're going to come to me and tell me you're going to have a workshop, I'm going to kill you, right? Not because I'm doing horrible workshops. Yeah. They've been over-workshopped by another entity or whatever. Mm-hmm. So it becomes a challenge these days. Now, the one thing in the big ramble is about, I have been in one or two of your workshops, right? And the one thing that I really love about what you do is your workshops are designed by you. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we are the guinea pigs of those workshops, and we see they're very, very raw end of how you design these. But I need to tell, this is a story, and by all means, we can cut it later on, but I need to share the stories. I got myself as in this, I don't want to call it a conference, but it's a movement. It's called the College of Extraordinary Experiences. Yeah. And a year ago, Aga hosted a workshop there where it started off where Aga shared a very beautiful story about how these people or entities went on a journey. And you told the story very beautifully, and we were all standing there without shoes on, feeling very uncomfortable.
Yes.
And then you told us to go into a room where the lights were really dimmed. We weren't allowed to speak to each other, and I think music started to play, and we had to act out or create the story that you have just told us. Yeah. And I remember going through this experience with going, what is happening here? like people are just going with the flow here. And this is people from all walks of life, right? And it was this amazing experience. And I remember you also said, Vanna, I didn't really expect that to happen, right? And
yeah. For
me, that's a classic Aga Shostak workshop. And this long ramble is like, how do you approach workshops? If you had to give someone on the other side of this a few tips about how do you not destroy a workshop. Mm-hmm. What are some of the secrets?
Yes, for me, a workshop is like cooking. So basically when you create a menu, you know, I'm this cook, my husband is always laughing at me because I'm always using people as guinea pigs, our guests. So basically typically what I do, I design a menu in a way that if you have three courses, two of them are something that I've already cooked before and I know that it's gonna work. And one is always an experiment.
Oh, okay. That's a good idea.
So this is my way of thinking. So basically for me, this comes from a sort of selfish place because I run a lot of workshops and I don't want to be bored during them. So basically for me, bringing the excitement into a workshop is doing this crazy stuff in the middle of it or at the beginning or at the end, just to kind of keep myself on my toes.
Yeah.
And, it's just always having this thing that you do for the first time. And sometimes, very often it works. Of course, with experience, I can adjust things on the go. But sometimes it kind of fires back. And, I have to recover from these weird things, which is also an interesting creative exercise. Because obviously, if someone is paying you for running a workshop, you cannot come out of it saying, okay, I screwed.
That didn't work.
Yeah. And I think that this is the advice, actually two advices that I would give. One is whenever I go into a workshop, I give myself into it. I'm not standing there being there 50% or 60% or 70%. It's for me I have this rule or this principle that when I come in, I'm 100% in. I'm giving everything I can. And basically people feel it because it's authentic, it's honest. And even if things don't go very well, I was running this workshop yesterday, two-day workshop, and I was asked to kind of bring the team to the prototyping phase. And I tried to do prototyping with them, but I realized that we had a complete miscommunication of what prototyping means. So they didn't want to go and glue stuff and role play and stuff like that. They wanted to have a strategic discussion that was supposed to be a prototype.
Oh, okay.
So that was not unprepared. I had tools and everything prepared for the prototyping, designer's prototype.
Yeah, hands-on. Let's go.
Exactly. And they just refused. And then what do you do? And then for me, this is another thing. It's I sat there and it's okay, guys, sure, you don't have to do this if you don't feel comfortable with it. How can we finish the day so I can bring you value? And suddenly they started brainstorming of what they want for me to do with them so they can actually come out with something that they truly value. And they designed that half a day. It was just half a day or 3 hours. But they designed it for me and I was able to actually run it for them. So
that's collaborative design to the extreme.
Yeah, but it was sort of collaborative recovering from a disaster. Yeah. So that was the second thing. And then the third thing for me is that if the workshop is not a challenge for me in terms of doing something that makes me want to believe in what should be the outcome of the workshop, people will feel that too. So, you know, like, if you don't challenge yourself as a workshop facilitator before you facilitate the workshop and kind of make it a challenge for yourself and for the team, they will not feel challenged.
Beautiful. Also, what I take away from this is we've been talking about a lot of things now, right? But we've been talking about design all along.
Yes.
Right? Because you design seed cars, you design workshops, you design your life, right? And the one thing that I love is, and I think sometimes designers forget about this, is that when you do something, you need to give a little bit of yourself, right?
Yeah.
That turns it into art.
Yes. You know, like you asked me what is the advice for designers? I think like probably this should be the top one. You know, like you are giving yourself away. And this is part of your soul and your heart and your mind that you put into something that goes into a world. Yeah. And you decide what it is.
Exactly.
This
and
is
it,
what you control.
It goes, and it's for everything, right? It's, we're not only talking about that dream project. It's that horrible little button that you have to move somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Or you need to own that little horrible button.
Yeah. And actually, maybe the button is not that horrible.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, it's your attitude that makes it either
amen. Yeah.
Good button or a horrible button.
Exactly. Aga, now, in this podcast, we have this special feature. People are clamoring for this feature, especially Jonathan. I can hear he can't wait for this. Is that we value storytelling, right? Mm-hmm. And I've got this very old deck. This is not seed cards, unfortunately.
But good, come on. I know them like through and through. There would be no surprise for me there.
The font on these is not that great, but I love them. Carry them all everywhere I go. So I'm going to shuffle this deck, right? And then you tell me when to stop.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't even have to shuffle. I can just, you're right here in the room.
Yeah, right.
You can draw one, but let me explain what the rules are, right? So this is a little storytelling deck, and on there is a little challenge for you,
mm-hmm.
right? You're going to read the question or the challenge, and you'll then answer the challenge. It's going to be you telling us a little story.
Mm-hmm.
But then I must say, it doesn't have to be design related. It doesn't have to be, and you can lie if you want to.
Okay.
I mean, in fact, someone lied before, and I completely bought the story that I told.
All right.
Not because I'm gullible, so select one and go for it.
All right. Tell a story about a surprise. Okay. You will recognize some truth in it. Imagine you're being invited to the other side of the world. And the person who invites you seems to be very excited about you being there. And suddenly you arrive and this person doesn't have time for you. It is a surprise, isn't it? So, and it's actually a bad surprise, a surprise that makes you go like, oh my gosh, what's going on? Why did I come? And there are two things that you can do about it. You can stick to the surprise or you can make a surprise out of a surprise. So basically what you can do, you can, like, you know, being in a new place, there are always people who are willing to connect with you and to talk to you and to spend time with you. So either you can sit there like being all grumpy about, hey, like, you know, like I don't like it and I want to go back and, you know, like that was all a bad idea. Or you can connect with people there and then make it into an adventure that started off maybe not that great, but can end in any way you want.
That's beautiful. Yeah. It's a lesson on reframing, right?
Yes.
That's awesome, Aga.
Aga, we got to learn about you during this episode. And what we would like to know now is who are the person that influences you the most during your career? You met so many people in all walk of life. Who are the ones that you consider as mentors?
I think that there are like two kinds of mentors. The mentors that you choose and the mentors that are, I call them accidental mentors. So sometimes you are ready to hear something and you meet a person and this person, sometimes you just meet this person for just one time. Or maybe this is your friend who tells you this one thing and, you know, like mentors you into something. And I think that I have countless people in my life who are those accidental mentors. I particularly remember one friend of ours back in the Netherlands, Elmo, and he used to be a champion in karate.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, like really high challenge and mm-hmm. so on. And I remember I was talking about some challenge at work and I was like complaining about it, you know, the Polish way. And he looked at me and he was like, you know, like, you know, it was a party and, you know, like we were like drinking some wine and so on. And he was looking at me and saying like, hey, Aga, why are you feeling so sorry for yourself? And it was like, you know, it was a mentoring that stayed with me until today. We are both designers, so we had a lot of professional discussions. But I think that that was the moment of mentoring that stayed with me until today. But I also had mentors who I chose to mentor me.
Yeah.
There's quite a number of them. Like Maddie, the program director I was telling about before, who gave me the wild card to join the user system interaction program. She was my mentor for years. She was like really helping me with a lot of things. There was, unfortunately, he also passed away, an amazing professor, Kees Overbeke in the Netherlands. The most beautiful design thinking person who gave me this amazing advice that I stick to it. I'm sticking to it today,
yeah.
Which he told me, like, remember, your passion is to put design as first.
Mm.
And basically, you know, it just stays with you forever. I was so fortunate to be mentored by also a person I mentioned before, Jorgen Bang Jensen, the CEO of Play, of this telecom. And he taught me so many things about myself and how I could be so much more strategic in the way I behave. He's always laughing at me that I'm like, you know, like I'm hot-headed and, you know, like crazy. And he's...
Just a little bit.
Yeah. And sees this as an amazing thing because that expresses passion. But he says, okay, like you need to have passion and you need to have patience. It's a different way of mentoring, but I think that Seth Godin with Alt MBA Workshop, and I wouldn't even say that it was Seth. He is the mastermind behind the Alt MBA. But the people that I've met during Alt MBA, my team, Ali, Steve, and Phil, whom I'm in touch with until today, and also my mastermind group, Sunil and Garrett, they are my mentors. They are mentors in terms of being my mirrors. They listen to yeah. what I say and they reflect on it. And I cannot hide.
Excellent.
Sometimes you think someone who helps you along the way by saying, well done, Aga, or well done, mm-hmm. Werner, good job. That's not really the help you need. Sometimes you need someone who calls you out for things.
Yeah. And you know, like, I think that for me, a mentor is a person who sees in you what you cannot see in yourself.
Yeah.
And is able to point at these things and help you see this
yeah.
and act on it.
Yeah, I mean, I had a reflection just before we met, actually, now for this, is that I was talking to someone and I started realizing, and I continue to pick it up in a lot of the things that I do. And it's not really necessarily about being self-centered, but I use the word I a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I would do this and I'm going to do that and then mm-hmm. I will do this. And then the problem with that is that we forget that we actually have people around us that we can turn to. So, mm-hmm. for example, if you have a problem with audio or time zones, you turn to your friend on the other side, right? And you just spoke a whole list of people who actually support you and mm-hmm. that you have to lean on. And for me, that is powerful. I think we forget that sometimes.
Yeah. So, actually, I remember about one other mentor who is so prominent in my life that I keep on forgetting about him. And this is my husband.
Of course.
Because, like, you know, we have this relationship where we always challenge each other. But I think in that way, we also mentor each other a lot.
Yeah. You guys are awesome together. To see you guys interact is always fun.
Yeah, although sometimes it's, like, so intense.
But that's the fun part, right? Yeah. Aga, what book are you currently reading?
I'm reading a book which is called The Art of Happiness, written by an American psychiatrist, whose name I don't remember. I'll look it up and send
yeah,
it to
we'll,
you.
Yeah, we'll post the link, yeah.
Yeah, and Dalai Lama.
Oh, okay.
And this is basically a discussion between science and spirituality on what happiness means. And I'm reading the second part of it. I didn't read the first one yet, but I'm reading the second part, which is about how you can make a world a happy place. And it's a fascinating read.
What is next for you?
Huh? What is next for me? I decided to give myself time right now to do things that are very personal for me. I have this project that I dreamt about for a long time and I'm really scared to finish. I'm halfway through and I got stuck. So I've decided that I'm going to give myself the next 3 months with very little consulting work, like yeah. professional work, and get myself into a deadline of making this thing happen.
Needs to ship.
It needs to ship, yes. And actually, I do have a deadline for it. It's August the 6th, because this is my next call with my buddies from Alt MBA.
Oh, so like this is real.
Yeah, that's a perfect deadline for it. And I also want to... So this is a very personal thing. And probably once it's ready, I can talk about it. But today, I wouldn't even dare. But another thing is I've been already working for some time on a professional project, which is basically finding a way to measure customer experience in a way which is sort of a next evolutionary step from what we have today. Mm-hmm. I worked out the whole methodology together with my husband, with Łukasz, and we tried it out with one of the banks in Poland, and it seems to be actually quite successful. So basically, this is time to write it up. It's not going to happen really fast, but I want to start writing about it and getting this into a book or a booklet and basically share it with the world.
Excellent. Wow, great. Then there's something else that I wanted to mention that's also next for you, and this is a shameless plug, but luckily the three people sitting here is also involved with that, is that I'm also very blessed to be working with you on another podcast project. Yes. So this is going to put us on the line, right?
Yes.
It's a show called The Next Wave.
Yes.
Jonathan can't be heard on that podcast, but he's definitely influencing some of the audio quality there with his editing skills. We are planning to have the show live quite soon. It'll cover topics around experience design. We are thinking about what the next wave of experience design will be. So
it's basically what the next wave of design.
Of design. I like when you say things like that. It'll be deep conversations with designers and people of all walks of life.
Yes.
Around this specific topic. And we're very excited to let that one loose and announce when that is available through this show as well, and of course through our channels. So keep an eye on us.
Yeah. I think that this is a way for both of us to learn more. Jonathan, you were asking how I learn about the new stuff. I think that this is one of the ways of these kind of conversations that open you up to thinking, to seeing things in so very different way. And I'm super excited. We already have a few shows recorded.
Yeah.
And I just cannot wait for more.
I mean, this is a very interesting platform, and can't wait to launch it. So I've put ourselves in a spot. We need to ship soon, right?
Yes, finally.
And then we've
been playing with this one for quite some time.
A lot of traveling and a lot of other things going on, but it's nearly time to ship.
Yeah.
Then, if I want to stalk you or get hold of you on digital, what is the best way to keep track of what Aga is doing?
So actually, I have a professional website, which is called uxplus.pl. It has a Polish and English version, so you can see some of my projects there and stuff like more professional stuff. I can be found on LinkedIn, where you can see my portfolio, like you said, and different stuff and see what's going on. I write on Medium. I write about design and self-development. So like recently, slightly less, but basically this is my plan to go back to writing very soon. So I think that there will be more of this coming. And if you look for Aga Szostek, S-Z-O-S-T-E-K, then you can
post the link in the show notes as well.
Yeah.
For sure.
And I'm on Facebook with my professional profile, UX Plus. I'm throwing some inspirations there. And also like if I'm running some workshops or stuff like this, you can find it there. And I think that is about it.
It's super busy. Aga, thank you very much for joining
us.
Thank you.
We could have spoken even more. You're always an inspiration to myself, and I'm really proud to be able to have you on our show and also introduce you to my good friend Jonathan.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here, really, guys. It was amazing.
Excellent. And then all the best. And we'll catch you at the next one. And we'll definitely have you on again.
Oh, fantastic. I will be so happy to be back. And it was amazing to talk to you guys. And so I know that, talking about oneself is always a pleasure. but it's really having those questions, it just really challenges me to think on different things. I loved it.
And I think, one of our goals is to have people actually deep dive. What is the motivation behind that? What is the inspiration to drive people? Because that is what's really of value that you can take for yourself, for people listening to this.
Absolutely.
Aga, thank you very much.
Thank you so very much. All the best, and talk to you next time.
Great. Ciao.
Ciao.